This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, welcome everybody to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined today by almost the entire Orange Bloods ensemble. We're missing Dustin McComas, who weirdly has the day off this week. He's like taking this week off, a little bit of vacation time. Of course, in late July at the start of Major League Baseball season, just the way he planned it back in January. Joining me, though, no McComas, but Alex Onwar, Jason, everybody else is here. And fellas, I was thinking about this morning. The difference between this week and last week, and Onwar, I guess I'll come to you first. It feels to this week, I don't know why. I can't answer this question. Feels like there's going to be football this week, whereas last week I had some real questions about whether or not this thing was going to get played in. There haven't been any major announcements. Everybody's still kind of waiting on what the S – everybody's waiting to reactionary, right? But I don't know why. Like, my confidence that there will be football this week seems to have increased.
Well, I think the reason for that, Ketch, is, you know, that last week we were seeing the dominoes starting to fall. And so we saw what happened with the Ivy League canceling postponing. You saw other people canceling seasons, especially like the smaller conferences. A week before that, Stanford had eliminated, a lot of the lesser sports. So we started thinking like, oh, crap, these dominoes are starting to fall. And what we saw essentially was, especially after the Big 12, and so you're like, okay, Big 10 pushing it back. The Pac-12, they're pushing it back, right? And then what you saw from the other three conferences were like, yeah, we're not sure we're going to ride with you on that one. And so I think that's the thing. I think when we saw the other conferences not have the knee-jerk reaction, because remember, when we saw this in the spring, Catch, it was like the NCAA tournament. It was one conference after another, after another, after another, and there was no basketball. And then, of course, then there was no sports. What we're seeing now is the SEC saying, we'll hold off on that. Give us a little bit more time because we think we could play football. You're seeing the Big 12 saying, okay, we're probably going to do whatever the SEC does. And so now the ACC is like, hey, we'll go in and hold off. You also got Chris Del Conte talking about, you know, this past week about, hey, still the possibility of putting 50,000 people in the stands at half capacity. So when you hear that and you see that he's saying, hey, we're still planning on trying to play USF in the season opener, I think that's what gives you a little bit more hope, was those dominoes started to fall and it stopped. And the other dominoes that we thought were going to fall are still standing.
Jason, it's funny to me how the SEC, not even doing anything, is kind of controlling the reactions of everybody. And look, I'm sure,
but not doing anything is kind of doing something almost.
True. Yeah. That's a great point. But deep down, everybody knows those dudes are playing football one way or another. And if you consider yourself a big time football program, I think this is where Texas finds itself in recruiting, because I've seen this reaction where it's like, we've got to play if they're going to play, because if you're a football prospect watching this, it signifies that football matters more, that if they are a little bit less pausing in the face of a pandemic, the SEC is like, well, games are in September, so what do you want us to do? But here we are, and now there is news that, you know, Texas is aiming to get any season ticket holder that wants to be in the stadium. Like, they're telling them, we're going to figure it out. And we're looking at half capacity, which I started thinking today, Ticket City's had a good week this week, right? I mean, they presumably, like, in the next month are going to have tickets in the secondary market for Texas football games. That's one thing that hasn't been talked about. And I guess it doesn't matter how tickets end up in the hands of people or whatever. But there's going to have to be a screening process of getting people in the stadium. Tickets this year have a if you're Ticket City and you haven't had business in a long time, I've always felt like 100,000 Texas tickets undermines your ability to sell some tickets for most games. But 50,000 tickets this year.
They'll be at a premium now, yeah.
Now, I have a feeling if the seasons go on like it now looks like, I think, it's going to happen to some degree, whether it's a full schedule or I saw Brian Davis at a Statesman tweet yesterday that he had a source in the Big 12 saying they're still pushing for all 12 games, but you know, they're also listening to a 9+1 model, which we were talking about as a staff yesterday. If you're Texas and you only keep one, which one do you keep? I wonder what LSU thinks about that. I wonder, and it seems like the SEC is closer to playing a full schedule than anybody else, but maybe they'll do whatever it is that they're going to do. I wonder, because Anwar, you asked if you had to pick one, what's the right non-conference game to play if you're Texas? And although it's the sexiest, I don't think it's LSU. Like, I think if you're Texas, you need that warm-up game, because you could not be playoff good, but the Big 12 could open a door this year where an undefeated, and not just Texas, an undefeated Big 12 team could emerge, I think, in a year where the conference doesn't have any behemoths at the quarterback position outside of Sam Ellinger on paper. You know, it seems open. If you play it smart, you might find yourself at the end of this in a situation that maybe you wouldn't be in a normal college football season, especially if the NCAA gives some ideas to extending the playoff, because trying to choose four teams among a pool of teams that haven't played a full schedule potentially seems really hard to pull off.
Yeah, well, I think if you're Texas, and I know some people are going to not like the initial reaction, but if they hear it out, it will totally make sense. If you can only do a plus one, you just do UTEP, right? That's if that you got to do 9+1, you got to do a UTEP. You're like, well, what about LSU? Okay, well, you know, we still got to find out what the payouts are or this and that. But if you are Texas, you from a financial standpoint, we just start there, Ketch, right? If you got a chance to play UTEP and you're going to have a home game, so at least at 50% capacity, you're able to get some ticket sales, concession sales, parking, all that other type of stuff. That makes way more sense from a financial standpoint than trying to go against an LSU, where you're probably not going to make as much money. You got to remember, in college football, the majority of your money comes from the ticket sales portion of it and then the sponsorships. Like, I've seen a chart and a pie. It's the overwhelming majority. So it's the TV money. It's not like NFL. It's a small portion for TV money as opposed to that big pie. Secondly, then you take the tune-up game. You've got a group of guys who, you know, we talk about this all the time, who really have not worked with their coaches. And I think the last thing they really would need, if you're talking about only one game and your first game of the season, man, you need these guys playing almost an exhibition game where you can have some coachable teaching moments. The last thing you need to do is go guns a-blazing in week one. And then we'll follow that up the following week on the road at Kansas State. Like, I think at that point you say UTEP, that's the gimme. That's the exhibition game. Then you get some of your money. Like, all that makes sense if you're going to do a plus one.
Alex, you want out of that LSU game if I'm giving you a chance?
Oh, yeah. But you know what? I'm not sure that whenever you play somebody like UTEP, don't you need to pay them like a couple million bucks or something like that? Like, yeah, that's how a lot of these –
but like USF was getting 1.9, so I'm imagining UTEP's going to get a little less than that because they're not as big.
I just wonder in a year like this if you could save a little cash. I mean, it didn't like LSU's going to charge you money to play them. But if it was just me and I was just like Coach Herman and I want to do what's best for the football team, even though that's an awesome game, it won't be the same fan experience that it would have been regardless. People likely aren't going to be traveling to – We can say with some certainty that people aren't going to be traveling to Baton Rouge in droves and having the tailgates they dreamed about and everything like that before the game and the big national exposure there and game day and all the rest. But it would still be a cool game for sure. It'd be an awesome game to watch. I just think if you're Herman, what's best is, like you guys said, just get that, you know, kind of ease into the season with that easy onset and slide right in. That would be how I would want to go about it, especially just given the fact that, I mean, seven new coaches on staff, an entire defense and offense that has been installed, but not really, you know, not really practiced with any live bullets going. So
that's a great point. That's a great point, Alex. The idea that the seven new coaches breaking, like, you know, breaking their duck against LSU, that's less than optimal in terms of work. Plus, let's be honest, this has been a Texas football program in the last few years that when it it's non-conference games against teams with pulses on the road. Like, I'm thinking of Maryland, and, you know, like, this team, I think, would do well to have what amounts to a preseason game, whether that's South Florida. If there's only going to be one, that's it. The whole thing, Jason, is really complicated, though, because if you're Texas and you're like, let's cherry pick which game we're going to play, you're kind of messing with other people's emotions, too. Like, if you're South Florida or you're UTEP, and the idea of a 9-plus – I'm guessing this is why Texas ultimately – well, that and they get a second home game if they can pull it off. But if you play a full slate – you don't have to mess with anybody, but, you know, like, Texas lives in a world where they're waiting to hear what the conference that South Florida is in is going to do. And
so that's what I don't get. Sorry, Kitch, I'll jump. Like, if SEC says, hey, they're going to play their full schedule, and pretty much every other conference is saying we're only doing conference games or maybe conference games plus one, who are they going to play to fill out their schedule? How's that going to work? I mean, the NCAA needs to come out and just make a blanket rule covering everybody and just say, hey, everybody is going to do conference games, 9 conference games plus one, or everybody's going to play conference games only.
But the NCAA has weakened itself to the point where nobody cares what they say.
And they don't have that power. They don't have that power over football. They have the power over basketball and the other sports. But when it comes to football, the NCAA, however it's structured, doesn't have that power thing. So
but how will that play out? I guess they'll have to schedule like non-power five schools or division.
I wonder if some of these schools can, you know, a conference can say this is what we're going to do, but if a school said no, we're going to go ahead and play our full schedule. I mean,
not if other teams don't want to play here. Not if they're saying, hey, we're not playing these games.
But I'm saying independently, like, let's say South Florida's entire conference said we're doing a plus one model, and South Florida's like, no, because if I'm South Florida, you cancel the Texas game. And if I'm UTEP, I'm canceling the Texas game. Like, it's what? Yes,
maybe, but they want that payday, like Alex.
They do, but a payday at home. If you're UTEP, I mean, if you put 10,000 people in the stands at, you know, I mean, you're. I don't know. It just seems like you'd want you if you're UTEP and you only get it's a plus one. Wouldn't you make it? Wouldn't be a ton more money, but I have to believe you'd make more than $1 million. If you had a home game, one home game.
UTEP?
It is UTEP.
But even UTEP averages more than 25,000 people a game.
Because Texas fans would be showing up. That'd be the only reason they'd make
money. By any means necessary, but you'd want to get those tickets at, you know, even at $50 a pop, if you let 10,000 people in the stands, that's $500,000 without any concessions or anything else.
But who would they be playing? They'd be playing some – I've said Texas fans would be showing up. That would not be in UTEP. It'd be UTEP playing a home game against some crap school. They'd probably make more money playing the game in Austin.
I wonder if it's close. Like, everybody's got to make these weird decisions, and I'm curious, Anwar, what was this? You had your podcast, so I'll do a very good and inexpensive plug. If you haven't listened to Anwar's conversation with Joey Knight, who covers the South Florida football program and does, he's basically like the Anwar of the South Florida football program. He put out a conversation with him yesterday talking about South Florida. The sense from South Florida on this game, considering, you know, they're first up. If someone hasn't listened to that podcast, please do so. But Anwar, Joey's interpretation of this game in this moment is
they need the money. I mean, like, you know, it's simple math. Like, it's $1.9 million. It's nearly $2 million. It's Joey said that's the biggest payday that South Florida has ever received. You know, from an opponent. So, you know, when you're a program like South Florida, you're a non-Power Five school. This is your chance to make like some good money, you know. And this is nothing new, right? I mean, the small conferences have done this for years. The SWAC and MEAC conferences have funded their athletic departments using those first few games by being sacrificial lambs. So they want it, you know. You got to also understand, like, you know, Florida and Texas. I mean, these are more you know, conservative states. So, you know, what you see a lot of things that happen. I'm not trying to make this political. But you see a little bit of a shutdowns in more liberal states than you do some of the more conservative states. So Florida being more conservative, you know, they're more willing to do this. And so when you look at it from a USF perspective, you know, look, they play in Raymond James Stadium. That's where the Bucks play. They don't fill that thing out. And they don't have a ton of – you can't fill – I mean, you know, the Bucks aren't necessarily filling it out. But, you know, you got that college team. This for them, especially for Jeff Scott, is, you know, a major thing. They're also trying to do an new athletic facility. So if South Florida, like, the one thing they definitely want, they want the Texas game. Like, if there's a plus one and they could do any kind of, you know, sending Tiff's treats to Chris Del Conte, or, you know, or they'll probably fly in line and stand on a barbecue, fly down here and stand on a barbecue line for Chris Del Conte, because they definitely want that pick.
And I'm guessing if we talk to UTEP, same answer. Like, that those teams play. I guess the ultimate answer to that question is that UTEP and South Florida wouldn't play this game if they felt like they can make more money playing a little sister of the poor at home, right? I mean, hey, let's stay home and make more money and entertain our fans versus taking a paycheck.
And then the question is, who would they find? Like, if they took away that home game, let's say it's a plus one, and they took away the road game, like, who is USF finding as a fill-in? Like, you know, you get BYU can fill in for some folks, right? And Notre Dame can fill in for some folks, but who's USF finding? Anybody else who's quote-unquote below them, they're canceling their football seasons. They got nobody else.
Well, it's interesting. I saw that Hawaii – I can't even remember who they're playing, but it was like Hawaii and somebody announced they are absolutely – and I want to say it was a small school, but they are definitely playing a game like on September 26th. And I don't know. Let me just ask everybody this, because we could do weird little questions about the individual situations inside of this for hours, I think. I've asked this question of everybody before. Jason, I'll start with you first. On a scale of 1 to 10, your confidence on, what is today, the 23rd? Yeah, July 23rd. So we're like 2 weeks away from the team reporting officially. If at least that's what we think. Your confidence that football is played this year today on a 1 to 10 scale is what?
I'm like you. My confidence is up considerably from even last week. And you know, Anwar touched on a lot of those reasons. Even the UIL said, hey, we're playing football in the fall, and it's going to be pushed back a little bit. But my confidence is probably 7.5. I can't quite go to 8, but I don't think it's going to be a full schedule. I think it's going to be maybe, like we said, the plus one model, or even only a conference schedule. I don't think my confidence is high in a full season, but my confidence is high that there's going to be a season.
Anwar, same
unmuted.
Question.
I'm unmuted.
Both of us within like 60 seconds of each other.
Yeah, went out. I'm going to bump mine up. You said the question is full season or season at all?
Just football. Like, I not 12 games versus 10 or anything like that, but just as of today that there will be a season in the fall.
I'd probably go to a 7, and I think I've probably been at a 5. For a while, but I'm probably at a 7, just holding, you know, giving myself that a little wiggle room just in case. But everything seems trending. Like, catch, you know, the one thing I'm going to have in the war room, I like this because sometimes I always get a little war room preview. What people may not understand this or realize, because we're focused on something else, but the thing I'm going to have is, like, tomorrow they actually start upping the workout hours for the entire football program. I think they start going to like 20 hours, and they have more on the field and all these type of activities. Like, this thing is getting ratcheted up. Like, so where it was over the last 2 weeks, where, okay, they could only do like 2 hours each week of on the field activities. Now it's starting tomorrow, Friday. This thing starts getting ratcheted up right before training camp. So no one's pumping the brakes on this thing right now. And, you know, the one thing they don't want me to talk about anymore, and a lot of schools, it's not just Texas, a lot of people have put the kibosh on the COVID talk, and no one wants to talk about COVID stuff. But I did speak to a source, and it kind of did let it slip about that, you know, they feel like just about everybody might be out of the protocol this week. And they feel like they'll be at zero, which is what you're seeing around the country at a lot of different schools. So there are some positive signs that start pointing towards the start of football on time.
Last COVID thought, because, you know, I don't want this whole thing to be a podcast. Even this is this has been a positive COVID talk in terms of football, which I think is better than the normal COVID talk that we've seen occasionally in our podcast. We try to stick to football as much as possible. And I think we may end up being rewarded for that. I've wondered what it might look like if the season got canceled and right up until like the moment we've been doing running back previews. It will feel a little naive at that point, if it were to ever get to that point, considering how we've tried to stay the course. The money involved. The NFL this week. No, the NFL's doing something crazy, because their player, or like, they're talking about daily testing for everybody. $75 million is what it's going to. And first of all, like, a lot of people are upset that the NFL is doing this, because in order to get thousands of tests daily in and out and returned, it will require, you know, resources. But
Cash, can I just jump in there? Because sure. I think that narrative needs to be quashed. What they've done is they've gone into the private sector and gotten the company BioReference Labs that would not have been doing tests otherwise. I mean, presumably you could say, well, if this company wanted to be, the Great Samaritans of the world, they
Correct.
Could give these priced up tests for free out to the community or whatever. But this was not a entity that was.
Alex, I feel you. It doesn't change the fact that detractors are going to say.
Oh, that, sure. I mean, but
you're right. Like, they partnered up. Nobody's not getting a test because the NFL's is hogging up. It's not like that, but there's like, I don't know. And really, that point doesn't even matter. I only bring that up because Anwar touched on it. We're seeing the numbers drop. Oklahoma, I think, had zero, right, Anwar? Like, that was, and we've seen Notre Dame, and we've seen various schools like show their testing numbers, and they're at zero. I've been talking about professional soccer in Europe and how all of the leagues in Europe, all of them, every single one of them picked back up. They combined thousands of players and support staff and everything else. And yet the leagues haven't gone upside down. No team. The fear of like what happens when a plague breaks out and one team has 20 breakout. And like that just weirdly hasn't happened. The last thing on war I would say about what we're seeing with COVID, the numbers are dropping. But these kids aren't completely being non-social. Like, so they're finding ways, and it was a thing that we talked about last week about whether, or the last couple of weeks, could they pull this off before the clock runs out on them, which is learn some lessons from all what had been happening in June with all of the high tests that were coming back positive for a million different reasons. It looks like what's happening in July is different than what's happening in June. And it has to be because they're applying some sort of a plan that other people are having success with that's keeping these numbers down. And I haven't read any players say that they're locked up and they haven't, you know, they're doing workouts and are being treated subhuman or anything like that. They found a way, at least temporarily, when the rest of the state is otherwise not completely locked down, something's working right now with football, and keep doing it, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, and subjects like this, I feel like Alex is pretty well versed in, but I think they are just following the basics. Like, I don't think they're not doing anything out of the norm. It's not like all of a sudden they found the cure and that's the reason why. They're following the basics as far as the mask are concerned, as far as the hand washing is concerned, so far as some of the distancing is concerned, and you know, and you've had people who've had it, sure, initially. But then when you've got them in here in your system and say, okay, this is where you're living, this was that, and, you know, you've got guys who are somewhat self-policing and guys who want to play football, and you have that structure and that organization, which a lot of these guys hadn't had for months.
Yep.
You know, now you're in that structure, now you're in the organization, now you get to repeat the same messages. I think that's the reason why you're seeing it, is just from a structure standpoint. They know what to follow. They get the guidelines. And because they're following it, I think that's why you're just seeing such a massive decrease.
I want to switch topics because we are deep into the podcast, and I want to keep today's podcast hour-ish, so parting shots soon enough. Bijan Robinson. second half of this podcast in my mind is just us. I don't know. I don't know if gushing is the right words, but you get the sense it showed up on social media yesterday, right? UT puts out a thing. It feels like there's a something special brewing behind the scenes, that Texas has themselves something special here. And you would expect it to be the case, right? I mean, he is a five-star running back for a reason. He should show up on campus and everybody should go, holy shit, look at that guy. When we look back on it, that may have been the thing about Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray that the recruiting industry should have learned from. Those two guys showed up and everybody was like, yeah, no, those dudes are really good. I don't remember anybody being like, oh my God, this, you know, Bijan Robinson shows up and we're getting one-handed catches on social media and he just looks like $1 million. And, you know, the conversation was, this is a guy that by the end of the season, he's your starting running back. He better be, or the other guys better be playing at one hellacious level, right? Keontae Ingram better be at the level of his life. He's got a chance, Alex, to be the type of impact player that can change a team, can change a program, can change a team's otherwise 8 wins, but you add a special player that touches the ball potentially 20 times in a game, and it can do wonders for a team and a program looking to take the next step, especially when it has a quarterback like Sam Ehlinger, who you give him that type of weapon to keep other teams honest and to make them have to, you know, they got to give up something. You got to concede something to stop something. And I'm starting to wonder if we're undercooking the grits with Bijan Robinson, that maybe there's even more there than the Orange Bloods Nation has given thought to. And I think it's given a lot of thought to it.
I love Bijan Robinson. I've said from the time that I saw him at those San Antonio camps, you know, generally with the Arizona tape on these guys, you like to see them live first. It was the same thing I said about Jake Smith. Both of those guys, Bijan Robinson and Jake Smith, when you get to see them live, they're even better than what you saw on tape. And I just, catch, you said, you know, what it can mean for a team just to have that kind of player. And just if you just reverse it, just reverse engineer it, I mean, what do they say about big-time players? They make big plays in big games, right? Well, to get to those big games, you have to have those big-time – you have to have those big-time players. And Bijan Robinson is that big-time player. Now, the chance of him getting up to 20 touches in a game when Keontae Ingram is healthy, I don't know exactly how that's going to work. Maybe they can have two of them out of the backfield at the same time. Heck, Onwar can maybe speak to this better than I can, but they've been talking about maybe using more 21 personnel next year. Now that's mainly been in their explanations about ways they can get Jordan Whittington onto the field at the same time as Jake Smith without having to run a true 4 wide receiver set. They're like, well, you know, shit, we can just go, you know, let's just go 2 running backs and, you know, have one of these running backs like Jordan Whittington maybe, you know, go in motion or maybe sort of flex out or, you know, get out open into the flat. And I did a column this week kind of showing a couple of clips from some of these guys that are exciting playmakers coming into next year. And just if you just watch that, was Louisiana Tech the first game? It was some crappy Louisiana team last year. They played Louisiana Lafayette, something. Before Whittington got hurt, you could see a couple catches he made in that game in that sort of intermediate area of the field out of the flats where he is just – you know, he's just terrific. So whenever people talked about, well, how are we going to get that guy on the field at the same time? Well, we've heard buzz behind the scenes. We can get 2 running backs on the field at the same time. If they can get 2 running backs on the field at the same time, for me, it doesn't always need to be to get Whittington on the field. It could also be to get maybe Keontae Ingram and Bijan Robinson on the field at the same time, because, you know, it isn't like Keontae Ingram has been bad. It's my opinion that Keontae Ingram's good. He's just not as good as Bijan Robinson, and Bijan Robinson will establish himself as the alpha sooner than later within that running back room. But, you know, it's a terrific problem to have. I don't know how soon he'll get up to like that 20 touch range to where he could be just this absolute difference maker that takes over football games like we've seen out of the, you know, the Chuba Hubbards or the, you know, Wisconsin last year with Jonathan Taylor or any of these other kind of true workhorse backs. I'd be interested to hear what what you guys think, you know, whether or not he's going to be a little bit muzzled by all the competition there.
I just feel like one of the things we've talked about, I can't remember if we talked about this in a recent podcast or not, but I think the key to like the Bijan thing is it's got to be Mike Yurcich that's saying, listen, I'm controlling who's coming in and out of these games. And I respect you guys as assistants, but I'm making this call here. And if they can do that, then I think, you know, to Alex's point, we can see, you know, those guys get in a rhythm, get in a flow, and then all of a sudden see the cream rise to the crop, as opposed to this guy just did two series and now another guy just comes in. Like, you just don't see that with, like, to Alex's point, like the Oklahoma State, when you had that guy, they're like, refeed him. And in Texas, it would be interesting to see what their the attempts are for some of these running backs over the past few years, because again, agreeing with Alex, like, you just don't see guys get into a flow because it is really hard to understand rotation that I just don't understand sometimes.
Good point, Anwar. The running back rotations and receiver, you know, in the past there've been some head scratchers here. So maybe this is something where Yurcich could step in and say, hey, I want these guys on the field, get them out there and keep them out there until I say otherwise. You know me, I'm always the guy, hey, I got to see it first, but Bijan's kind of the rare, I've been a Bijan Robinson fan, if you will, just from the day I first watched his film, from the first day I talked to him, from talking to his coach about him. I mean, the things I think that I like the most about Bijan and why I think he's going to be a superstar. I mean, listen, the guy averaged 20 yards a carry for a while his senior year. That speaks for itself. But I love his character. I love his personality. I love his drive. I think mentally he's got it. And I think the thing that doesn't get talked about enough, and I think this is where he can be a real weapon, this guy's a better receiver than probably most of the four-star receivers that came out of high school last year. I mean, he's that good of a pass catcher. So if Texas can get him involved, obviously in the running game, but you can really kind of change your offense and keep defenses honest by getting him involved in the passing game. The way we're seeing, you know, a guy like Christian McCaffrey or, some of the other top backs in the NFL they're starting to do now. I mean, I think Bijan can be a true every down weapon. And I tell you what, man, he's an easy guy to root for too. So, will he be a 20 carry guy? I don't know. I'm kind of like Alex. They usually tend to bring these guys along sometimes a little slower than I think they should. I think Bijan mentally can handle pretty much anything you throw at him, but sure, it's going to be fun as hell to watch and see how he develops. Hopefully it's for everybody's sake. It's more quickly rather than slowly.
Anwar, do you think a Bijan Robinson plan exists today? Or is that just the kind of thing that they got to have that kid in a practice first, right? Like, well, you can't say let's do 15 by week three. Let's have that kid getting 15 touches. You haven't had a practice with him yet. I would hope, right, that there's an answer somewhere in the middle, that if you're paid $5 million a year, you've got five plans for Bijan Robinson, depending on however it is that he shows up and how comfortable he sets in. But if there's a guy on the team that the offensive coaching staff should have a plan for as best as possible, he might be the guy, right? Like, it would behoove them to know what the hell they're going to do with him as soon as possible.
Yeah. I mean, he can't be the guy that you're just waiting to see and, you know, and maybe what happens in another year or so from now. Like, first of all, you know, this red shirt's not even an option for a kid that's that talented. And, you know, what it'll be very interesting to see, and I'll go back to your switch a little bit. You know, Yurcich didn't recruit this guy. You know, that's not, and Yurcich didn't recruit Keontae Ingram, right? So everyone should be coming in with a blank slate. Like, we know what Keontae Ingram did last year, but at the end of the day, if you're Yurcich, you say, okay, I'm not tied to anybody, and I'm just going to play the best guys. And whenever we have these conversations, we don't mention Roschon Johnson, and someone on the board inevitably gets mad. Like, well, what about Roschon? Like, Roschon should be a part of the rotation. He should be getting that guy, but he should probably be like in the Daniel Young conversation where he's getting some touches here and there. But we're talking about like what we consider to be the top two. Like, anything you get out of Roschon is a bonus, but we're talking about the guys that we feel like should be your starters, averaging 6 yards, 7 yards a carry, or at least what those Oklahoma backs usually go. So, man, I think if Yurcich just says, man, I'm rolling it out, I'm playing the best guys there, then that plan gets accelerated, I think. But to your point, you definitely need to practice.
It's funny, Anwar, you weren't around for 2001 or the early part of the Mac Brown stuff.
The winning years, the 10 win years that you guys used to put your nose up at consistently.
You've never seen 45-10 wins treated like losses until you've seen Texas fans take winning for granted, because they actually should take winning for granted. There was once upon a time they won games so easily out of habit that it really was about style points. If they beat a team by 4 touchdowns, but it didn't look good, people would be pissed. Mac used to have this reputation. And it's funny, because in 2005, Jamaal Charles shows up. And the one thing that was different about Jamaal Charles than any other running back, really young freshman running back that Mac had in his first 6 or 7 seasons, was Jamaal was on the field for the Ohio State game and was a critical piece of the offensive puzzle in his second game of his career in Columbus, Ohio, with essentially a national championship spot on the line. The winner of that game was in a great position to, at the end of the season, play for the championship. But before that, in 2001, Cedric Benson shows up. And Anwar, it was clear from day one that Cedric Benson was the team's best running back. It was clear from the first game that Cedric Benson was the best running back on the campus. They get to the Oklahoma game, and I think that was week 5 or 6 of the season, and Benson still wasn't starting, and he still wasn't getting the lion's share of the carries. And it's almost, Jason, it's almost been 20 years, but every Texas fan who's old enough to remember those years still will joke about how Mac Brown wouldn't start players until after the Oklahoma game, and Cedric Benson was kind of...
So their backs were against the wall coming off a loss.
Exactly. Oh, once they lost to Oklahoma, like, guns a-blazing, but the week before, no, like, Cedric Benson wasn't a factor, and so... It's like 20 years of stuff, and I shouldn't, like, Tom Herman has nothing to do with that. But my experience in this is that we've seen in this town players like a 5-star quality get broken in so slowly that it becomes a problem. And then we've seen other situations where, like, they've let kids just get thrown into the fire and hell be damned. What's your gut on Tom Herman's instincts on this? If it's throw caution into the wind or be very cautious and conservative, do you think he trends one direction more than the other? Is he in the middle?
I put him more, not as cautious as Mac. I mean, who was notoriously cautious, but we've seen that a little bit. I mean, even, you know, with Jake Smith, and they had to dial him back a little bit last year, but, you know, I think coaches by nature are pretty cautious in that type of stuff. You know, they're so worried about, and I understand the ball control, or, hey, a mistake here, but at some point,
blocking,
man,
like, yeah, pass protection, seriously, yeah, things like,
I mean,
that.
But, you know what? Yeah, they may make a little mistake, but you know what? The positives they bring to me are usually going to more than make up for those, you know, little mistakes. But I think Herman has some cautiousness to him with that. So, you know, I think we've seen it before, but not like we were talking about with Mac so much. But I would tend to put him more on the cautious side a little bit, which is a reason why I think Bijan and most others will be brought along relatively slowly.
So I would disagree. I would say that I think we've seen that over the past 2 years, that if a guy struggles, like, that guy hit the bench. You know, we look at last season, and, you know, this, you know, Kobe Boyce struggled early on. And after that point, I mean, he was coming off the bench, right? We look in the bowl game, and I mean, Jacquez started in the bowl game over Juwan Mitchell, right? I mean, so
that was probably some other factors contributing to that one. I mean,
well, it still happened.
They still put like a guy who was a walk on at one point in a bowl game versus Utah. So so I'm just saying, like, and then there's other examples. So I would just say that, I don't think you'd be as cautious. And I also think that this is...
A lot of people thought Roshan should have been starting at running back, or Jake should have been getting a lot – Smith should have been getting a lot more playing time than he was. I mean,
I don't think Jake Smith should have been getting anything more than he was getting. I don't think
he was on fire to start the season. Then he had a couple.
His touchdown to reception ratio is phenomenal. Now, let's not get it twisted, but that guy almost did fumble away in the Kansas game. So I mean, he was what he was. So I'm just saying that I think that while there may be guys that come along slowly, I don't think in this instance with a 5-star, you treat him the same way you treat anybody else.
He is a little bit different animal. Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about the conversation is I think both you guys have been right. I think you can point to situations where he's thrown caution into the wind and put his best talent on the field and seen what they can do. There have been other cases. Jake Smith did struggle. And you can make a case, if you believe that Jake Smith is an elite talent and they recruited him and believed that to be the case, then you got to work through those things. Because I'll give you a scenario that before you guys started talking, I was – and it led me here. So thank you guys for beautifully throwing the alley-oop to me. What can't happen is, let's say they play a full 12-game schedule and they go on the road. Let's say Bijan fumbles twice against LSU. And he doesn't even have to lose both fumbles. Obviously, if he did, you know, we know the way Keontae Ingram is remembered for his mistakes in that same game a year ago. They do tend to linger. What can't happen? And the coaches didn't do this with Keontae. They were really good about every time. It's like there's a different rule for running backs and wide receivers, and maybe that's a Drew Maringer, Stan Drayton thing. But when the Texas running backs had mistakes last year, they made a point to go back to them to rebuild that confidence. I think you have to do that with Bijan. What can't happen for me is Bijan can't have a bad game and then the Jake Smith thing happen, because that team wasn't playing for a championship really and truly last year. So player development, winning games matters. I'm not saying that you trade wins for development, but God, man, if the idea is that in 2020 or 2021 or 2022, you're going to win a Big 12 championship, cultivating the talent that's going to get you there has to be as paramount as anything else. They've got Bijan Robinson. If he's going to end up being one of the best running backs that school has seen, let's say in the last 20 years, like if he struggles in the name of winning, you can't just sit that guy down. There's a weird balance that I think they have to find. And I guess that's why Tom Herman Onwar makes the big bucks, because Jason's right. I think coaches have a tendency to be conservative because it's all about winning the games first and foremost. But to win that game in December that you might need to win, you might need to take a few growing pains in September and finding that happy balance so that you can get Bijan Robinson hitting his peak at some point in this season, a peak which he never comes down from. Man, that just sounds like a really valuable thing that they've got to go out of their way to obtain, if at all possible.
Let me ask you something, Ketchin. You know, this is a tough question to ask you off the top of your head, so you may not have the answer. But
17.
When it comes to standout, you know, 5-star running backs, you know, from what you just remember in history, how many of them, you know, what kind of playing time do those guys should traditionally get as freshmen? Like, do we know? What Trey Sanders got like last year, you know, as a freshman at Bama. I don't know if he's hurt or anything like that, but if you just go back in your history and thought process, what usually happens with those guys?
It's hard. It's about situations, right? I mean, Trey Sanders can show up and Alabama's got three other 5-star running backs that they've recruited at Preep. So, you know, suddenly then 5-stars doesn't matter as much because half the team is made up of 5-stars. Texas is a program that has a mere fraction of that type of talent currently on its roster. You know, I don't know. It's situational. I think typically 5-star running backs that show up at places that don't have other 5-star running backs blocking their pathway, they typically play a lot. You know, my experience of Texas running backs of that level is that even if they start slow, they eventually play a lot. Even Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray, you would say that about. They may not have been gangbusters, but they weren't lacking in volume early in their careers. Yeah, I think the majority, unless it's a situation where a guy's signing with Alabama or Georgia or something like that, and it's just older, other elite-level players in front of them, I think they typically play a lot. I can't remember many situations. Maybe a guy like So-So Jamambo. How do we say his last name?
Jamambo, I believe.
Yes. I didn't say it right.
We may both be wrong. We'll go with Jamambo.
But that would be a guy that I would point to on War and say, I don't remember many instances of a five-star running back showing up, and then the moment they show up, you go, ugh. Maybe he's not five stars.
Yeah, he flamed out altogether. But Catch is right. I mean, depth chart plays a lot into that. But a situation, Texas has established depth with Keyonte and Roshan. But this isn't with all due respect, both those guys were fine players. I mean, those aren't true, national game breaker type names the way people are expecting Bijan. So, the situation he's stepping into doesn't lend itself. He's going to be an immediate 20 touch a game guy, but he certainly should be a contributor with a chance to gradually increase his workload if he shows he can handle it. So, that's a good question. Almara, you could think back to Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray. I'd have to go back and look. Ketch, do you remember how involved they were early on?
I'm looking at it right now because I was going to ask you this question, Jason. This is – before you hit me with a pop quiz, I'm literally on the page, so I'm gonna be able to look it up. I'm going back to the 2001 season because in 99 and 2000, Hodges Mitchell was the starter following Ricky Williams.
So it was really, runner, yeah.
What was really interesting about when Cedric showed up was that they didn't have that guy, right? So they didn't have Hodges Mitchell. And do you know who kept Cedric Benson off the bench in 2001? And I had to look it up. I completely forgot.
No, that's
Alex. You want to take a gander? There were three running backs. If you look at the opening game of the 2001 season, three running backs received 14 or more carries. Cedric got all of his in the fourth quarter.
It wasn't Selvin Young.
Nope. Cause Selvin came the year after. It was Ivan Williams. And Victor Ike.
All right. Okay.
Yes.
Austin Bowie, right?
Yeah. Bowie. One of your old Austin Westlake rivals.
Yeah, that kid was good.
But neither one of those guys was worth a shit, really, as a college running back. Like, they were okay.
Ryan Nunes.
Yeah. Yes. What I was looking it up because I had convinced myself that Brett Robin was the starting running back.
That's who I was going to make that guess. I'm glad I didn't.
Brett Robin played a lot, but didn't have a single carry in that game.
I've heard he's a hell of an orthopedic surgeon these days, right?
Ivan Williams averaged 4.3 yards per carry, and Victor Ike averaged 3.8 yards per carry against New Mexico State, and like, it took Max six games of seeing them to give in to Cedric Benson. I don't know. It'll be interesting. And Anwar, FYI, I'd say Ivan Williams and Victor Ike were more accomplished coming back than, or were more highly thought of than Keyonte.
I disagree with that.
Basically saying I don't think many people think Rashawn is like Victor Ike was a guy that was highly,
The only highlight I can remember was a kick return for a touchdown.
He didn't have a great career, but he was near five star. Not all the way five star, but he was near five star.
What's interesting, I've gone through our rivals list, and I'm not writing this weekend, so if you guys want to take it, you feel free, any one of you. But I'm not seeing a whole lot of impacts from five stars as freshmen. As I just look.
I guess Noah Kane wasn't a five-star, was he? He did pretty well at Penn State, but I don't think he ended up being a five-star.
I mean, the only five-star running backs I remember are the ones that go to Texas and Oklahoma. So, you say five-star running back, and I think Adrian Peterson, which means every five-star running back ends up winning the Heisman or competing for the Heisman.
Correct. But the majority of them are around a 3,500 yard range. I'm seeing this. So far, I've seen Cam Akers from Florida State rush for 1,000 as a freshman. Got 194 touches, but a lot of these other guys didn't. Even like a guy like, Darius Geis. I mean, he ran for 436 as a freshman before he, went on and did well over the last 2 years.
Malcolm Brown, as a five star at Texas, started his very first career game and had 16 carries for 87 yards as a true freshman. Obviously, you know, Malcolm Brown's career is weirdly kind of underrated now because he finishes as an all-time top 10 running back in the history of the school. He's multi-year starter, like plays in the NFL. And weirdly, his career is kind of viewed as a disappointment because he didn't hit huge heights. But if I said that, I don't know, if I say that Bijan Robinson finishes his career in the top 10 all-time history of the school in rushing, we'll all kind of like, I think, nod our heads yes as, well, yeah, that sounds like a good place to start.
But I don't think – I think people have higher expectations than that even for me.
No, you're right. You're right. I wonder – because we're doing this with Sam, right? It's like, does he finish – I think we've had like 10 – will he finish on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks kind of conversations and what has to happen in order for him to hit that levels. Real quick, he hadn't even taken a practice yet. What is your career – I want everybody to give this answer. Alex, we'll go with you because you're in alphabetical order. Your career expectations for Bijan Robinson before he's ever taken a practice snap at Texas, how do things end?
He won't go pro after his junior season, but he'll stay for 4 years and have a good enough senior season to go to the Senior Bowl and be drafted either on day two or early day three.
That sounds disappointing.
Well, that's
okay.
My
no, I
prediction.
I okay. Anwar, what about you?
Because I think it, Keontae is probably a, you know, borderline day two, early day three pick if he comes out.
How many of these guys go in round one anymore, man?
Yeah, they don't.
What do we have? Clyde this last year? I mean,
I wouldn't put him in. You know, he better be a freak of freaks to go in round one at this point.
I mean, you know, it's tough. I mean, because, you know, we're projecting 3 and 4 years from now, and then I'm having to project what, if Yursich is here, if Drayton's here.
If they get Kamar Wheaton.
Yeah, I mean, so.
That hadn't crossed his mind, Jason.
This is an impossible. My point is, this is an impossible question to ask.
It is. It's a tough question to ask, but I'll say at this point, he's a day, just safely say he's a day three NFL pick. Okay. You know, fourth round, maybe fifth at the latest.
Jason?
Well, Anwar and I are on the same page. I were going to go, like, what is statistically he's going to do at Texas. But I think talent-wise, yeah, I would say day three is what I would – but I think he has potential to certainly be day two or even creep into day one. He's that kind of physical talent, and just – I mentioned his versatility. But, again, I mean, that depends. I mean, is he going to be the bell cow at Texas for the next – I mean, maybe he takes over this year, then he has a great sophomore and junior season and then goes pro. Is Texas going to – land a guy like Kamar Wheaton could impact that. There's a lot of variables, but I think certainly top three round talent is very realistic expectations.
I don't know if he hits 1,000 yards this year. Did I leave
it? Yeah, I don't think.
But I think he gets it next year, and then I think his junior year he has a monster. I think we're talking 3 years. I don't know where he fit. I think he's close to being 1,000-yard back in all three seasons. I just don't know about this season. He could be 700-ish. I think he leaves after his junior year. I think he's a day two pick. I think he's an All-American level running back by the time he's a junior. And I'll go so far as to say –
get some linemen to block for him too.
If he's – great running backs have a way of making – I always say this about Emmitt Smith. You know, Nate Newton wasn't shit before Emmitt Smith showed up. And neither was Mark Tuine. Like, I've been a Cowboys fan for a long time, and I remember some of those dudes before the really good players showed up. And as soon as Emmitt Smith showed up, you know who turned into a Pro Bowl offensive lineman? Nate Newton. You know who turned into a Pro Bowl-level offensive lineman? Mark Tuine. Those dudes were Jags. Hall of Fame running back shows up, and all boats get lifted by that tide. I think Bijan Robinson is a guy who's good enough on paper that he makes your offensive line better. He makes your quarterback better. It'll be a massive disappointment for me if by the time he's a junior, he's not the best running back in the Big 12 and, you know, in the conversation for best running back in the country. If, you know, Oklahoma has a guy that ends up being first team all Big 12 because both of them had 1,600 yards rushing and you pick one or two, whatever. But I expect him to be in rarefied air amongst his peers at the college level. And if he's not, and it's not injuries, something weird went wrong. Because on paper and everything that my eyeballs tell me about this kid as he's showed up early on campus, he's different than the other dudes that Texas has been recruiting at that position. Let's go into parting shots. Who did parting shot first last week? We're supposed to be doing on this like reverse pivot NFL draft thing. Have we forgotten? I don't even think it matters. Yeah, I think Alex may have gone first last week, and he didn't have much of a parting shot. And then Anwar stepped in with a massive, like, game-changing, close-the-show parting shot. Anwar, are you going to do that to us again today?
Nah, I'll be kind of boring today.
Then you go first. You
get okay, that's good. Yeah. two things. Hey, welcome to Austin, Tesla. I mean, come on, but keep bringing these the nice businesses here. Keep making our property values go up. So, you know, I'm cool news. I'm not like you guys, right? I'm not so entrenched in stuff. So you guys might be turning your nose up to these type of news things when you hear about people relocating and bringing businesses here. I look at it as it's always good for the economy. It's good for our values. So. You know, it's cool. I have a Tesla, you know, I'm a Ford guy, you know, American made. That's who I am, you know, go Detroit. But, that being said, still excited to catch as a Ford guy too. So I think he's been converted. The only other thing is in my, you know, quest to learn a little bit more about this state and local areas, I will be, going to Lake LBJ this weekend. So no Sunday pulpit, but, going to see what's out there, what that area has to offer. No. Not staying at Horseshoe Bay or anything fancy or rich or anything to that effect, but I'm going to spend a weekend out there, and I'm sure it will probably be a little bit better than Corpus, but we're going to see what that all entails. So those are my parting shots. You know, nothing spectacular.
My kids want to go to Padre now. I've never been there. I think before the summer's over, I'm going to have to do like a weekend trip.
That's where I'm heading, catch. I'm heading there on Saturday.
They desperately want to go. And I've never been to Padre. So my son has been looking at bridges in Padre. And anyway,
a big one to get on over there.
Jason, I know. I've seen the pictures. He keeps on asking me, like, what do you call the bridge? And I'm like, I don't know. What is your parting shot, Mr. Sukumel?
Yeah, you call that bridge a bridge that is so packed you got to get off on and you have enough time to drown a whole keg of beer on your way down there whenever you're in college.
Yesterday I called the South Padre Visitors Bureau, and she's like, oh, thanks for coming this week because there's no traffic coming. I'm like, all right, great. But it's weird. This is not what my parting shot intended to be, but I said, are there any beach restrictions? And they said, yeah, you can't take like a canopy. You can only take an umbrella. It has one pole. Anything that has more than one pole, you can't take. You can only have two chairs under each umbrella. Each umbrella has to be 15 feet apart. I'm like, we got a family of six. So how strict are they? She goes, no, they're being real strict. So we're taking a beach umbrella, borrowing two others, and we're going to have to space them 15 feet out and put two chairs under each one. Just really weird deal. But yeah, I'm leaving Saturday to head to Padre for a good part of next week with same deal catch. Just kind of a last hurrah before school starts for the kids. But, my parting shot is I'm super excited about baseball starting tonight. Yankees at the Nationals. You got Garrett Cole and Max Scherzer going against each other. So kind of a rematch. I think it was game one where they threw against each other in the World Series last year. Super excited about baseball. Very excited about that game in particular, being a Yankees fan. Other parting shot is for those who listened to this before the War Room was posted, not a lot going on in recruiting, but I actually got some interesting recruiting notes. So we should have some pretty decent recruiting updates on guys like Quinn Ewers, on guys like Kamar Wheaton, Gunnar Helm, the tight end who was in Austin on Monday. I'll have some stuff on him. Should be a, you know, fairly interesting war room for you recruiting junkies. I don't want to give too much away here on the podcast, so we'll just save that. Just check out the war room on Orange Bloods on Thursday night.
Right. Does that leave Alex? I'm confused.
Yeah, I feel bad because it's like you guys are teeing me up for a big parting shot. I really don't have one.
I have a decent one. I'll pick it up. I'll pick up the slack.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just don't have any. I'm like Jason, excited.
You're just
about
waving
sports.
The white flag. I give up.
No, how about this? I'm glad the college football isn't waving the white flag. It feels like we've gotten a little bit of a hope it's not a dead cat bounce, right? Hope it's not a dead cat. But it feels a little better this week, right? It feels a little better. We have Major League Baseball coming back. We have Major League Soccer coming back. We have the NBA coming back on the 31st. We have.
Can I ask you, what dead cat bounce? I can't let that go. What was that? What does that mean?
Dead cat. Well, that's like when a stock after it falls, you know, or anything really. Just like
where is a dead cat falling from? Out of a car?
Like the top of a building. Oh. Right, and then he get kind of when he hits the ground, he bounces up a little bit, and you.
I thought cats landed on their feet, no matter what.
Start of a new run up, you know.
Sometimes but all they dead count bounce. Is the
cat's dead body just bouncing up off the ground because of the
I thought maybe Baylor baseball players invented that remark. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeesh. So a bit basically. Things feel better this week. We have all these sports coming back. We have everybody, you know, they're doing the coronavirus testing with the all the players, you know, after tough starts, getting these guys into these routines and stuff. They're now doing testing, and it's coming back like, you know, people are acting like, you know, who'd have thunk it? They're acting like responsible adults, and, you know, they're getting these things under control within their leagues. It's starting to feel better and better for football, so – super happy about that. Super happy about I know I always talk about it, but I was just super glad to see yesterday that the Great American Outdoors Act did indeed pass in the House. And so now it's been moved on to President Trump's desk, who's promised that he's going to sign it. So we have a win there for everybody that loves hunting and fishing and loves our great outdoors here in America. So I'm happy about that. My family is out of town for the weekend. I get to watch some baseball and kind of kick back a little bit without them, without the kids hanging all over me. So excited about that.
How the hell do you and Ketch get to have your wives and kids leave, man? I need to figure out.
No, it's very simple, man. You just tell them,
get the hell
out. I don't want to go. Yeah, I don't want to go.
Where are they going though, man?
just to see your in-laws. I'm just like, I'm happy to see your in-laws.
Unfortunately, my mother-in-law moved closer. I should have kept her in Oklahoma. Then I could sit.
That's exactly right. That's your problem. See, look, Jason, the trade-off is, though, when you want a sitter, like you have one.
My mother-in-law.
Fair enough. What happens is when all of your family lives outside, you have someone like my wife who's starving for A, people, and B, her family. And, you know, like if she wanted to go this weekend, well, she knows I got to ride on Sunday. And Anwar is on vacation for the weekend, or just taking the weekend off, not vacation, but you know, so like she'll just know, like, I gotta work. And the travel time, and the, you know, I've tried to do this thing before where I'll go visit her family, and I just feel like a dirtbag when I'm working on my computer in an office.
I've been there, everybody else is
barbecuing and stuff, and no matter how much they tell you, oh, we know you have to work, it's okay, you know, deep down they think you're an asshole. So yeah.
Kesh just basically totally explained it better than I ever did. Yeah.
That's it's the same thing.
We used to go visit my wife's family when they did live in Oklahoma. And same deal. I would set up my little office back in there, even on Christmas holiday or whatever. I'd have my little office set up back in the office room, and they'd kind of do their thing, and I'd spend a lot of my time back there. So
on the Texas Tech game where, you know, it was like 48-45 and ended at like 2 a.m. that one Thanksgiving. What year was that? Wasn't that the year that Kirk Johnson had his run and then got hurt? And then I think that was the Kirk Johnson.
That was the Texas Tech game, yeah. And then it would have been the Kirk Johnson game.
That would have been the Kirk Johnson breakout game.
It ended up being the Chris Warren game.
Exactly.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That night the game ends at like, I don't know, but I was over at Heather's aunt's house. Because it was Thanksgiving, and they said, you can just work out of the house. So I did. I worked out of the house. Like, by the time I finished my article and did all my work, it was 1:30, and everybody in the house was just staying up and waiting for me to finish so they could go to bed. I felt so bad. So every year, they're like, come on down. You can work while – No. I did that once. I did that one time on Thanksgiving, and everybody hated me for it. So now I never go to anything ever again. My parting shot. I want to go back to Kobe Boyce. Anwar mentioned his name earlier in the podcast. I wanted to mention it probably for the last time in this podcast form. He's going to go be a normal student. He announced last week that he was going to continue on as a student at the University of Texas. He's done playing football, and along the way mentioned you know, that one of the things that he'd been dealing with was mental health. And I wanted to give that kid just an attaboy and a pat on the back and a virtual hug, if you will, to let him know that, like, it took a lot of bravery to, like, even acknowledge that publicly. He could have said, I'm stepping away from football to focus on other things. He made a point to emphasize that this is something that he's working on, and it's an important point. And I saw Malik Jefferson retweet him and offer support when he made that announcement. And I thought back to Malik Jefferson's career and how, while he was here, he battled things that, you know, I think most people take for granted when it comes to big time athletes like that, who think they've got the world in the palm of their hand and that life is just easy. I don't want to lecture anybody. I just want to remind everybody that these young men, I won't call them kids. They're kids to me because I'm 44. But these young men are like real people. They're real people trying to figure out life. They're juggling school and they're juggling football and they're juggling coronavirus and grades and all kinds of stuff. And you guys don't know this, but, you know, there are guys on this football team who come from families, you know, there's like millions of Americans who are out of work. That's UT football players' parents too. You know, that their aunts and uncles don't have jobs and can't put food on the family, which means that some of the kids on this team turned into people who had to put food on the table for their family this summer. And you've got kids on this team who have family members who are sick, not with the Rona, but with other stuff, right? Like, cancer doesn't go away and heart attacks don't go away and diabetes don't go away. Like, the thing from Kobe Boyce over the weekend was just a reminder that we all need to be mindful that when we talk about these young men, we need to remember that they're people. We need to remember that they don't live in some magic vacuum where the only thing that gets to matter is football and how they develop on the football field. There's a long list of guys in the history of me covering Texas football that were NFL players that got sidetracked by things that had nothing to do with their talent. So just keep that in mind. These are young men. And here's the thing that kills me. This is the thing that I want us to better remember. If that had been an Orange Blood subscriber, if any old Orange Blood subscriber who's been on the site for any length of time had announced on the board that he was battling mental problems, everybody on the board would rise to the occasion, I feel like, for the most part, and they would support, and they would reach out to him, and they would send DMs or her, and we would set up accounts to help support them financially. Look, we would step up for the moment, because that's what we do. It feels sometimes like we don't have that same level of consideration for the very people that everybody shows up to cheer in the first place. Just remember that. When you want to get on a player, when you want to make comments about things that you think he might be going through, just remind yourself you don't really know. You don't know at all what these guys are going through. And DeMarvion Overshown is a perfect example. He made some comments on social media, and everybody thought they knew exactly where his head was when he was trying to decide what he was going to do and what he needed to do in his career. And life's never quite that easy. There were more things going on with that. And until any of us have walked in that kid's shoes, I just think we need to be mindful that people interpret things differently. People handle things differently. Stress is a common denominator that we all feel, but we all handle it different. We just need to be mindful of that. This has been a tough year, and I think the UT football players, outside of all the things that we've been talking about, have quietly been telling us this. It's been tough on them. Their brains are a little scrambled. Let's treat them the same way that we treat each other when we make the confessions that our brains are a little scrambled, with a little bit of decency, a little bit of empathy, a smidge of respect. We'll all do a little bit better that way. For myself and for Dustin, who's on vacation, I hope he enjoys the hell out of opening day. Alex, Anwar, Jason, thank you for listening to the Ticket City Podcast. 1-800 sold out. They will be selling tickets soon. It does feel like slowly the world's starting to reach a wee bit of normalcy in a time when there's not any. Thanks for listening. We'll do this again next week. Later.